Welcome to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. To learn more about us and our upcoming annual conference to be held March 13th to 15th, 2025 in Harrisonburg, Virginia, visit ciceroniansociety.org. The proposal's deadline is September 2nd, 2024. I'm Christopher Annadale, and this is another episode focused on the theme of place. On this episode of The Sower, our places are Alaska and Lansing, Kansas. And here to tell us about Alaska and Kansas are Chase and Lori Spears. Chase Spears is first and foremost a Christian husband and father to five children who help keep him and his wife Lori young at heart. He recently concluded a 20-year military career as a public affairs officer and now focuses on fighting for freedom in the realm of ideas. Chase writes on military affairs and politics, with his most recent work appearing at The American Mind. He specializes on the political nature of the military and the impact that nature has on those who serve. Chase holds a PhD in leadership communication from Kansas State University, and you can find him on X at Chase M. Spears. Lori Ann Spears is an educator, mom, and homemaker. In addition to homeschooling five children, she also teaches mathematics at St. Giles Christian Academy in Leavenworth, Kansas, and Children's Sunday School at the Church of the Open Door, also in Leavenworth. Lori is deeply passionate about training up the next generation. She holds a degree in math education from Lee University. Chase and Lori, welcome to The Sower.
It's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having us on, Chris.
I'm talking with you two now because I remember back in early March, about 2 months ago, the three of us had an hour, maybe 2 hour long conversation at one of the famous social nights following one of the days of our Ciceronian Society conference down in Dallas, Texas. And you guys told me all about your life, both in Kansas now and previously in Alaska. And I said, we just absolutely have to share these stories with the podcast audience and talk more about them. So I'd love to hear more. I'm sure people would like to hear more about what was your guys' life like in Alaska and how is that and the other places you've lived shaped the kind of people you are now? Please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I remember I was at Fort Gordon, Georgia. I was in the Army at the time as a captain, going through the captain's career course. And when I joined the military, one of the reasons that Lori was very supportive of it was she said, you know, it's kind of our way of getting to see the world, wasn't it?
Yes.
Among other reasons. Yes. And Lori had grown up as an Air Force brat, but had not got to travel all that much. Her father, most of his career was in Colorado Springs, where she grew up. And so we kind of took the Army as an adventure. What can we see of the world while we're doing this? And so when I went to the career course, I came home one day, our branch manager showed up with this big spreadsheet of all the jobs that were going to be open for our class. And we were instructed to rack and stack, you know, what our preferences were. And then they would go back and do the math and decide who got what. And so I brought it home and there were assignments from all over the nation. But in particular, there was an assignment opportunity in Alaska. Mm-hmm. There was an assignment opportunity in Korea. Yeah. And it seems like there was one other we were kind of interested in.
Yeah, I just remember I was like, I want to go to Alaska or Korea. I didn't really care about anything else.
Yeah. And so neither of us had ever lived in that part of the world. Neither of us had any Pacific experience. But we just thought, hey, these two places are on the list. They'd be really cool. And so we put down Alaska 1, Korea 2. And I have completely forgot where we put everything else because that's all we cared about. And we thought we'd have to compete to get to Alaska. That proved not to be the case. If you volunteer for Alaska, you're going to get it. And so we drove up there. Really, we almost felt a little bit kind of like adventurers, explorers, if you will, a little bit. Because we drove cross country in the winter from Augusta, Georgia, to Bellingham, Washington State. We got on a ferry and we rode the ferry for 3 days up to Haines, Alaska. And I'd love to hear how Lori remembers this, but I'll tell you, I'll never forget standing on the front of that boat as it cast off from Bellingham, Washington. And here I was, kind of this almost pilgrim feeling of I'm on a boat and I'm leaving the mainland and I'm going to something I've never seen before. And I really have no idea what it's going to be like.
Yeah, I grew up reading stories about the prairie, which has now been civilized, but also stories by Jack London. And I think Louis L'Amour also wrote a little bit about Alaska. And, you know, Alaska still hasn't been tamed or civilized. So I was like, okay, we're going into this wild frontier and it's going to be like the prairie stories of Kansas that I read growing up, but it's a little bit colder, but still that kind of frontier living. And we ended up in Anchorage, which wasn't quite as much wild frontier as I had been planning for, but it was still very exciting and just so much fun.
The joke is when you're in Anchorage, you're a 45-minute drive any direction from Alaska.
So you guys sound like you were a young and adventurous couple then back in the day.
Yeah, I think so. We had this idea of let's just do what we can, see what we can of the world. And it's still, we still have a little bit of that spark. Although now with older kids, we are definitely much more interested in a place to call home long-term. But at that point in time, it was about what can we see? What can we experience? And to Lori's point about Alaska being wild, we found out really quickly just how true that is. So we got off the boat at Haines, Alaska. Now, Haines, Alaska is down in the kind of panhandle. If you visualize on the map, that's still the part of Alaska that's connected with Canada. It's an archipelago, very mountainous. Most of those cities are inaccessible by road. So you go there by boat or aircraft. But Haines is the first city that is actually accessible by road. And then from there, you have a 700-mile drive out of Haines back into Canada through British Columbia, through Yukon. Then you come back into Alaska about halfway up on the eastern side. And then you drive down in between a mountain range the last 300-400 miles into Anchorage. And that drive through BC and through Yukon, like, I don't know if any of you have ever experienced frost heaves on a road. So keep in mind, we're getting there in, what was it, December, January? January.
You said this is 700 miles?
700 miles.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And we're not talking interstate driving. We're talking two lane, contour the land kind of road over the river, right, through the woods.
And it was January. And especially once we got into Yukon, there weren't trees anymore. You're so far north. And so everything's just white. And so you're driving on this strip of white that you really hope is the road, but you're not sure because you can't tell. It's just there's the white that looks like it's been driven on. And then there's white that looks like it's not been driven on. And you just keep following the tracks of what went in front of you however many minutes ago.
Yeah.
Because you're out there by yourself.
Only car on the road frequently.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. There'd
especially be, in January.
Yeah. We could go a couple hours before we'd see another vehicle passing us the other direction. So it was very humbling. They've got enough gas station space every couple hundred miles, that we never had any issues with that. And we could always, you know, find some food. But it was very, very different. And even, that far north during the winter, that's all tundra ground up there. And I've heard of tundra, but I never understood what tundra was until I got up there. And for your listeners who may not understand, when you hear the term permafrost, much of that land is permafrost. And what that means is even when summer comes, the warmth doesn't really get that far underground. And so you've got this permanently frozen layer of ground 3, 4, 5, 6 feet beneath you. And so the water doesn't have anywhere to go. And so the land on top remains very soft, very squishy. If you get out and walk in it, you'll often go down to your knees. I've done that hunting many times. And so the land, when winter comes, it refreezes. And depending on how cold it gets, it'll do what we call frost heaving, where it will just make this otherwise flat piece of earth will just come up several feet. And so this happens on the road. So you'll be driving along and all of a sudden you'll hit a frost heave. And sometimes you can see it coming and slow down for it. Sometimes the smaller ones, you can't, because like Lori said, everything's white. Like I know I'm on the road because there's piled up snow to my right, and there's piled up snow to my left, and there's reasonably clear ice straight ahead. And so that's what I assume the road to be on. And I assumed correctly every time, fortunately.
Yes.
But then you hit the frost heaves, and we'd read about that. We'd been warned about it. But it's something entirely different to experience it. And so there is definitely a level of humility coming through that, of realizing we are, we are getting the benefit of having this experience in the 21st century, when the road is still maintained every year and we have our GPS. But I thought, my goodness, the people who built this highway in a matter of months back during the 1940s, during the Second World War, what moxie they had, and what bravery those who drove the road in the decades ahead of us had.
How big are these frosties? Are we looking at thinking about speed bumps? Or are these as much as 18 inches high? Are they going to launch your car into the air if you or tear out the bottom if you hit them too hard?
The full range. Some of them are as small as speed bumps. Some of them are pretty heavy speed bumps. Some of them, if you hit them hard enough, you could launch your vehicle. Yeah, absolutely. And, wow. And those, we never either didn't encounter ones that big, or I could see them in time enough to kind of break some and know, okay, I see something's not right in the road ahead. Let me off the accelerator, decelerate a little bit. I think we had a couple of times we actually did lose contact with the ground coming off one. I started paying a little bit closer attention after that.
How long do you think it took you to become really Alaska people, if you know what I mean? Or did you ever?
Oh, we absolutely did. What do you think, Lori?
Oh, you know, it's one of those things, probably by true Alaskans, we were still sourdoughs by the time that we left. But we accepted the culture. We were ready to go and just ready to experience all that Alaska had. I haven't checked their snowfall from this year, but until this year, I was there for the year of the record snowfall for Anchorage. I think it was 134 inches.
I know,
in one season.
You told me
that's like 11 feet. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It was a lot of snow. And so that was, my first full winter there. Chase was deployed at the time. And so I was like, okay, I'm getting to know this snow thing and learning what to do, what not to do. And just enjoying and having fun. And then, you know, not long after that, we were there for the year of the record least snow. And we're also there for the record year of the longest snow season from first snowfall to last snowfall. So we got to experience a wide range of what Anchorage had to offer winter wise. And we dove right in and had fun, and just, we were ready for the experience.
Yeah. We were always told there are two kinds of people who move up there. The kind who arrive and very quickly realize this is not for them. And as soon as they can, they make an exit plan and execute that exit plan. And then the people who get there and fall in love with it and never want to leave. We were in the latter category. We extended our tour up there and did a total of 6 years. We loved it. I had tears in my eyes 6 years later, the day that we drove out, and we swore we would be back. It was a different lifestyle. I'm a Florida boy, right? So I quickly had to learn how to layer. I had to learn how to walk on ice. That first winter was a little rough on that. I did a lot of falling, but over time I learned how to walk on it. It wasn't an issue. We looked forward to the snowfall. We looked forward to the summers. The summers there are incredible. We look for the northern lights. I became a hunter while I was there. I'd never hunted anything until I was there. But you can't live in Alaska and not get into the outdoors. And so we embraced it. We loved it. Bought the four-wheeler and everything. And it was a hard, hard thing when the Army let us know that our time there was concluded. Even though in our hearts, we had kind of sensed that it was a season that was probably coming to an end. But we didn't want it to. We absolutely loved it there and embraced everything about it and still miss a lot about it.
Did you raise your kids partly in Alaska when you were there?
Yeah. So our oldest three, that's where most of their memories were made because we were there for 6 years. That was the longest they'd ever lived anywhere. And in fact, our younger son and oldest daughter, those are where their first memories were really made because they were 4 and 2 when we moved up there. And then one of our children was born there. So we left when she was 2. So her memories of Alaska are very vague, but she knows she's a native Alaskan. That is where our oldest three, that was their formative years, what they remember the most.
Now you guys are now in near Leavenworth, Kansas. So you've moved on, as one has to do sometimes in the military, from posting to posting. And Chase, you've recently retired, I think. What is life like in Kansas, and how's it different, and how have you settled down there in that part of your life?
Yeah, well, it's a very different lifestyle. It's a lot more kind of like what I grew up with, except a bit of a smaller town feeling. If you would have told me 10 years ago that Lori and I would live in Kansas, I would have had a hard time believing that. And it's nothing against Kansas. I've always had this romantic idea about Kansas, and I've driven through it several times and loved the plains and loved the big sky. But I didn't have family here. There wasn't any particular thing that I expected would draw me here. But several years ago, I got sent on a 3-week mission out here to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, which is a quick historical note, is the oldest operating U.S. military installation outside of Washington, D.C. And so a neat history there. It was set up as to help provide security for the westward movement along the Oregon and Santa Fe Trail Network during the westward expansion. So some neat history there. Unfortunately, the base is known predominantly in popular culture as a prison base, but it's a lot more than that. And so I came out here as a lieutenant about, I guess, 12, 13 years ago now, just for a 3-week tour. And I wasn't crazy about this area particularly, but the gentleman I was working for while I was here took me into Kansas City one weekend. And Kansas City is just terrific. It's a wonderful, wonderful place to experience, wonderful culture, a lot of neat stuff to do. Kind of one of America's best kept interior city secrets, if you ask me. And so I thought, this is a really cool place. I'll have to see if maybe one day, if I'm selected to be a student at the U.S. Army's Command and General Staff College, which is on Fort Leavenworth, that I would get that assignment, because I would love to bring Lori and the kids out here for that 11-month tour and let them see Kansas City. And we do some stuff in the Midwest and then move on. And then what happened in God's providence, we got here for the course. We actually left Alaska for a school fellowship tour at Georgetown University in DC. And then we were straight follow on here to Fort Leavenworth for the Command and General Staff College, which is a course that the top 49% of U.S. Army majors are selected for. And so I was very blessed to be selected for that. And, we thought, okay, we'll be here for a year. We'll do the 1-year tour and then we'll move on and continue our career. And, then as the Lord would make of it, I found out that there was a job here on the base that they really wanted me to stay and fill, because my qualifications and my experience paired really perfectly for that position. And so I said, yeah, sure, that won't be a problem. It's a nice area. We can explore it for another year or two. We love our church. We're in a wonderful church. Our children are blooming. It's a good place to be for a little bit. We'll hang out for a couple more years. And then over time, we just realized there wasn't really anywhere else that we wanted to go. We loved Alaska. I mean, to this day, we still own a home there. But we looked at how our children were doing here. The church that we attend, Lori and I have grown so much there. We look at the community. There's it's just a phenomenal community here around Leavenworth, Lansing, Greater Kansas City area. I've met so many great veterans in the area, so many great leaders in the area. And frankly, it's kind of a good halfway point between my family in Tennessee and Lori's family in Colorado. We just get on I-70 and drive you the direction, and in a day we're there. And we kind of realized this wouldn't be a bad place to stay longer term.
Our oldest son is now married, and he lives in Leavenworth, and that got me to thinking, you know, our kids are growing older, they're moving on with their lives. And as much as I love Alaska, the one thing that I always felt about it was very isolating. You know, it takes a week to get down to Washington, just driving. Not always that long, but it's still quite a trek. And so to get anywhere, you know, driving just, you know, it's like, okay, have to take a month because half of it I'm going to spend driving, or flying, and it gets expensive. And so I was like, if we're up in Alaska, that's the one downside, is it's far away. And I don't want to miss out on the moments of my kids' lives. And so, you know, we started looking around. It's like, well, Kansas is right smack dab in the middle of everything. You know, if our children go off and leave us, we're a day's drive from just about anywhere they could choose. And it's like, okay, family is important. And so I want to, as much as I love the adventure of Alaska, I want to be where I can get to family if they up and leave us, or if they stay here, then we're here.
Yeah. And I would say the older we get, places becoming more important. I remember in our conversation and when we were at the conference learning, you know, how central place is to the Ciceronian society. It's not something I had thought about a whole lot as a young person because we moved around so much. I remember talking to my sister who lives in Tennessee years ago, having this conversation, and her telling me that professionally, if they were willing to move, there were much better opportunities for the kind of work that her husband does than if they stayed in the area that they're in. And I said, well, then why wouldn't you just move? Like, this is easy. I'm in the military. I move all the time. It's what it is. People move. And she said, we can't leave this area. Like, this is home. And this church is our home. And that was such a foreign concept to me because, again, I'd moved throughout my childhood and then I joined the military and we were moving. So I didn't really know what place was. To me, place was whatever piece of terra firma my feet are on right at this moment in time. And then we get here. Let me back up. Every church that we would go to and every community we lived in were military communities and military churches. And so similar nomadic mindset, people come, people go, people come, people go. By the time our 6 years in Alaska were up, we were kind of like the old stay behinds because so many people had cycled through and left. None of our friends that we started with were still there anymore. And we were quickly becoming like, we don't know many people anymore. And then we get here. And it's kind of even though Leavenworth is a military town, and so there's still a lot of transients, there are also a lot of very deeply rooted families here, which was very unique for me. And I remember even at our church, seeing families there that have, you know, cousins and aunts and uncles spread across the congregation, two, three generations and more. And suddenly it started dawning on me, there is something to place. There really is. And like we have five children right now, and our oldest son is married. So any given Sunday, we take up a whole row at church. And I really like that. And so there's kind of a dream that we have now of, you know, we took the off ramp to the Army. I was actually on the list for promotion. I turned that down in order to retire so we wouldn't have to move anymore, and so that I could be freed to do the work that I'm more passionate about. And you know, if my kids decide they want to go somewhere else, God bless them. You know, we'll miss them. But I left home when I was a young man, and many people do. But I want that to be their decision. We didn't want to continue in the military and then be dropping them off around the nation. And we're kind of to the point now, we had this this dream, if you will, of, you know, 20, 30 years from now, there being, you know, a group of Spearses around here, and us kind of having some roots, having there being a place that my descendants can come back to and touch and know they have some connection to a place.
Yeah, that's funny. That's exactly the question I was getting ready to ask you. I was jotting down a note, you know, do you hope that in maybe 30 or 40 years, there are still Spearses in the pew at church after you guys are gone, and you know, maybe settling down, putting down roots, not just for your sake, but for your kids' sake and your grandkids' sake later on. It sounds like that's definitely a dream of yours.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We want there to be a place that we are known for, and this could be, and I think this is it. Now, of course, the Lord may surprise us. He has surprised us many times before with changes of plans, but, you know, we feel like we're home.
That's great. It's great to have a home. It's great to sort of settle down in a place. I will sometimes joke with my wife that we're never leaving this house. We're not moving again. They can just carry me across the street to the funeral parlor when my time comes. But I was thinking about something you said before about military life. Nomadic was the word that I couldn't think of that I was reaching for. There's a certain sort of necessary rootlessness that goes with being sort of at the disposal of the army or any other branch of the military for service. In some ways, that seems to me to be even characteristic of the modern American situation. I wasn't a military person ever, either as a child or as an adult, but I did live a kind of suburban existence. And, you know, the towns that I grew up in, the suburbs I grew up in have changed profoundly. And they don't feel like the kind of place that I can go back to. Is there a kind of stability in Lansing and Leavenworth that you guys, looking forward 50 years, can imagine it being roughly the same place and your descendants having roughly the same type of experience with it that you have and value now?
I certainly hope so. You know, every place changes in time. Every place adapts over time. I remember in North Central Texas, there's a little city called Graham, which is really kind of where I grew up. And when the conference was over back there in Plano, we drove over. We stayed an extra day to drive over and visit some friends. And I went back to my old church, and the church is still there, but it's not the same church. Different people, different pastor. I think I know a grand total of 4 or 5 people still who attend there. And so there's kind of this realization of the old saying, you can't really go home. You know, things change. Now we still had a wonderful time, and it's always good to go back and see things. But it is still a different town. It's grown, and Lansing will grow. I know that 30, 40, 50 years from now, it will be very different. It will probably not be a metropolis, but it'll probably be less rural than it is now. And so what will it be for my grandchildren, my great grandchildren? I don't know, but I know that at least as far as we're concerned, we're going to try to give them a place that they can at least know, hey, this was where there was a homestead, where there was a home place, if you will. And I think that's important to try how you shape communities is like, do families stay and commit to communities? And I think that's a big problem across a lot of American communities today is there's not a commitment. And a lot of this goes down to kind of industrial age ideas, post 1865 ideas of the United States is versus the United States are, where people are kind of moving about just because we have the mobility, we have the transportation technology and the affordability of, you know, fuel and great interstate systems. We can move about, we can be nomadic. And I'm not against that by any means. It's characteristic of my lifestyle up until now. But I also think that really takes away something from community, right? How do you build a community if there's a grand turnover every several years, or even every 2, 3, 4, 5 years? What does that mean for long-term rooting of people for the preservation of values to localities. And so I am looking forward to being able to commit and say, okay, well, this is where we plan to be, and this is where we plan to invest our time and our talents and our passions and our convictions, and to try to let our family name hopefully be a positive influence here in time to come, which is really hard to do when you're always on the go.
Very well put. Yeah, I think in some ways, thinking about my own places, that, you know, part of what you do in committing to one place yourself is you hope for certain kinds of benefits for your children and your children's children that you yourself didn't necessarily enjoy. You know, you're like an old man planting trees for the shade of, so other people can enjoy the shade. And it's as you were just saying, you know, given that things change, places develop, politics and economics change the shape of places as well, sometimes rapidly, it does feel like we're taking a little bit of a chance, right? We're sort of hoping that, you know, what they get will be worth the sacrifice that we've made to get it for them. But there's no way of us knowing in this lifetime. Have your kids adapted really well to life in Kansas? Do they seem to be growing up as Kansans now?
Yes. Our oldest son is a member of the Kansas National Guard, plans on sticking around Kansas with his wife, does never plan to leave. And then our next son, he has adopted, he's like, I am Kansas country. He's getting ready to graduate from high school and move on out. And he's like, I'm moving out to the country. I'm going to be a farm boy, live that kind of life. And he's loving it.
Sounds like some kind of Heartland patriotism in a way. Right?
So definitely got a lot of that. And our next daughter, she likes it. She likes the small town feel, getting to know everybody. Our Alaskan daughter, she wants wild adventure. I don't know if she's going to stay in Kansas. I have no idea what she will do when she grows up. But she does love Kansas. She's having a great time living here and getting to know the history. So I think, at least for most of our kids, Kansas is definitely their new adopted home.
I think certainly, at least for the oldest three, it probably will be. As a matter of fact, it was the kids who really clued me into the importance of stability. When they were young and we were younger, moving all the time was kind of fun. As I said at the beginning of our discussion, the adventure of the army, of seeing new places and meeting new people and new cultures and new things and new regions. And when I found out that we were staying, we had done 6 years in Alaska, and we got pulled out of there on very short notice because there was this fellowship they wanted me to take at Georgetown University. And I asked to extend and put it off a little bit. And they said, no, you got to get there now. So not only did we move to the state in the winter, we left the state in the winter. We drove out in a blizzard. It was sporty, let me tell you. And so, you know, five kids, six of us, me and Lori, four kids and a dog and a fully loaded pickup truck with a camper behind us on the little narrow roads. And we drove all the way through Canada on that one. We didn't take the boat. So it was sporty. But anyway, driving on ice again, it was great. But anyways, we got to DC and we told the kids, this is going to be short. I'm on a 16-month fellowship tour and then we're moving again. And so they didn't really plant roots. We lived kind of out of town in a house that had some land around it. So we were kind of by ourselves, except for Lori's dad, who was about an hour away that we could get a visit on weekends. But we came here and the kids knew this is an 11-month tour. So they were kind of guarded. Like, they'd been ripped out of Alaska, everything they knew. And they were guarded in DC, didn't want to connect, didn't want to really make friends because they knew we were just going to leave again. And so they came here with that same knowledge. And so they're kind of holding back some. And when I found out that they want us to stay, I came home and I said, hey, kids, we're staying for at least 2 more years. You know, let's unpack, make some friends here. We're going to have a good time with this. Let's do it. And they were all in. They were excited about it. And then about 2 months later, it was a Wednesday afternoon at about 4 p.m. local central. And I got a phone call, and I see on my caller ID, this is Army's Human Resources Command calling. And that's the office that handles, you know, your assignments where you go to. And so I know it's 5 o'clock out east where they're at. And I know they're not calling me at the end of the business day just for a social hello. And so I answer the phone and we get through all the pleasantries. And then they say, actually, you know, we told you you're staying there, right? I'm like, yes. Well, you can't stay there. We actually have someone else we need to put in that job. But we have great news. We have a job in Colorado and a job in Savannah, Georgia. Pick your poison. Tell us tomorrow which one you want. And so I went, Lori wasn't home when I took the call, and I just couldn't wait until she got home to tell the kids. So I sat the kids down to break the news to them. You know, hey kids, you know how I told you like 2 months ago, we're here, make some friends. Well, we may have to move after all. And the reaction on their faces told me that we are now in a different season of life. There was not excitement about, ooh, new places. There was mourning, about we want to be here. We have friends here. We actually like it here. And that was a wake up call. And so, you know, long story short, we ended up staying. I called a mentor of mine and just to kind of ask his advice on it. And he said, you don't call anyone else on this. I'm going to fix it. And true to his word, he fixed it. I didn't call anyone else. And 8 days later, I got an email from Human Resources Command with an apology for their confusion and telling us we are staying, and kids that the relief on their face. And so they really liked the area. And that was a big clue to us that even at that point in time, I was still planning on a 30-year military career. I had the career trajectory that there was very little doubt that I would ultimately make full colonel. But at that point in time, the math equation changed and I started realizing, all right, there are family considerations here that I haven't had to think through before, because moving is no longer purely adventurous to my children. It's actually something that that affects them in negative ways as well. And ultimately that was the first indicator, the first domino to drop, that resulted in us, within 4 years deciding we'll go ahead and hang it up at 20 and turn down the promotion so we can be rooted.
Yeah. I will never forget that day coming home from class and parking the van in our garage, and my oldest came out to greet me, and he was just devastated. It was all over him, the devastation that we were going to have to move. And, our older daughter was also just devastated. And our younger son, he was pretty stoic about it. He's like, moving's what we do. It's fine. We can do this. But then the 8 days later, when I got to tell him, hey, we're not moving, and just watching him cry in relief, realizing that the stoicness had just been a front that he was putting on because he had to do it, and realizing that stability is important, and allowing these kids to make and keep friends. And our oldest, I think the devastation was he had found the girl and he did eventually marry her. And so being able to stay and get to continue that friendship with her, that it turned into romance and marriage, was very important to him. And, you know, our other kids, they still haven't found that person, but they've definitely found their home in this place where, you know, they've got people surrounding to support them when there's a bad day. They've got people to go talk to when there's a good day. They have people to go share that with. And that is, I didn't realize just how important that was until that one day. And my stoic son was just crying in relief because he didn't have to move again.
Oh my gosh. Wow. What a beautiful story. And now he's married the girl, and they're living near you. That's amazing. I think that's a great place for us to conclude. On this episode of The Sower, my guests have been Chase and Lori Spears talking about their life in Alaska and now in Lansing, Kansas. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for having us.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Sower, please share it with a friend and rate us 5 stars. Go to our website, ciceroniansociety.org, for more information about our activities and mission.